calling State Affairs to order at 3:19 p.m. Tuesday, March 6, 2018 in the Max Grunberg Room, now with a full quorum. But as to the quorum, Martha, would you please call the roll?
Representative Johnson?
Here.
Representative Tuck?
Here.
I didn't know that was going to be that loud.
Representative Knopf?
Here.
Representative Wolf?
Here.
Representative Knopf, alternate, not present. Representative Ledoux?
Here.
Representative Birch?
Here.
Chair Kreis-Tonkin?
Here. And with seven members present, we have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you, Martha and Eileen, for facilitating today's meeting. A reminder to those in the room, please silence your cell phones. And we have four items on today's agenda. Quick committee action on two pieces of legislation, which are in their second hearing, HB 184 from Representative Josephson and HB 310 from Representative Klayman, and then a first hearing for SCR 10 from Senator Costello, and a first hearing for HB 360 from Representative Kawasaki. The amendment deadline was set earlier today, I believe, for HB 184 and HB 310. Both, no amendments were received. So this being the second hearing and public testimony already having been conducted for both pieces of legislation, it's my intent to open it up to committee discussion and then committee action. And then we can move on to the main business of today, SCR 10 and HB 360. On HB 184, if anyone on the committee pleases, we could bring the sponsor forward. Otherwise, I will open it up to committee discussion, and we can go from there. Any committee comments? Brief IDs. Coming back on the record, I think we were, any questions for Representative Josephson or committee comments? Representative Knopf.
So, yeah, I really have no questions, and just for the sponsor, you know, I read through this thing, and I guess I personally, I just don't have any problems with it. You know, he's just extending the same discrimination rights to every man, person, woman you can think of, LGBT or otherwise. I think it's a good bill. I don't see anything wrong with it, so I'm going to go support moving it.
Further committee comments?
Yeah, I will not support moving this forward. I I've been through this drill in the municipality. I don't see it as necessary, and my based on the testimony I received. Thank you.
A motion?
I'd like one make comment.
Representative Johnson, go ahead.
All right. I just wanted to say that I will not be in support. The law prohibits discrimination based on immutable characteristics such as race, color, sex, and based on characteristics that may be mutable over time, but which is nonetheless can be objectively discerned, such as pregnancy, marital status, physical or mental disability, and religion. Sexual orientation and gender identity or expression do not meet that definition and remedy in state and federal law, and remedy in state and federal law already exists to address those complaints.
Thank you. Representative Wall?
I move HB 184 version 30-LS0611/J from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note.
Is there any objection?
I object, and I think we should wait till the full committee returns. I think where Representative Ledoux is, our phone sitting right there.
The motion's made. Are you objecting?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think it should go to a vote.
Okay. Martha, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Our full committee's not here yet.
That's true. We have a quorum and a motion, and we're rolling.
Oh.
Okay.
Representative Birch?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Representative Knopf?
Yes.
Representative Wolf?
Yes.
Representative Ledoux, not present. Chair Kreis-Tonkin?
Yes. And with four yeas and two nays, HB 184 moves to committee. From committee, that takes the second item of business on today's agenda, HB 310. Representative Clayman was in here a second ago, but we have staff. Although, as with the previous piece of legislation, there were no amendments. We've already conducted public testimony. So this is ready for committee action. Are there any questions from the committee for the sponsor's office on HB 310? Seeing none.
I'm sorry. Oh. Can you just hold on just 1 second? Which one are you talking about? 310 or SCR 10?
HB 310.
Yes, I have some questions.
Okay. Please come forward.
I think I was not here when you, there's a hearing that's already been on this bill, right?
Yeah.
So maybe I have some questions, and if you will just give me the indulgence of asking them because they may have been answered before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And welcome, Representative Clayman.
Well, first of all, I want to say that I would not have been able to be married myself if this bill had been in place. I mean, if this had been passed, which gives me pause. But there's a portion of the bill that says marriage partners will be 18 years of age or older, or and otherwise capable. I guess I was wondering what otherwise capable means. And otherwise
capable. Okay, that's a question we'd have to ask the drafters.
Okay. I mean, I would like to get an answer to that.
I think it's an existing statute. I don't think that's new language.
I believe it's an existing statute. That's not new language.
Okay. Another part of the bill exempts members of the active duty armed forces, but it leaves a couple of questions. One is the National Guard exempt?
I don't know the answer to that question either.
Okay.
The armed forces, I know in terms of the non-National Guard, you can only join the National Guard under 18 if you have a parental waiver. So you'd have to get your parents' consent to saying that you or they consider you mature enough to be in the military.
I'm sorry, could you say that again? It was otherwise had to occupy it for a second.
A person that's under 18 and can only join the military with a parental consent to do so. So it's the idea is that the folks in the military are, by virtue of their joining the military and having been authorized by their parent to do so, they're considered equivalent to being a member of the majority.
I think it says members of the U.S. military. That's why I was asking. Is the National Guard not part of the U.S.
I don't think that's they're not part of the United States military.
Okay,
I think that's right.
And I mean, it kind of goes along with that. What about the reserves? And then what if one person is active duty military and one person is not, is a civilian? I mean, that was I just feel like there's a lot to do with the military piece.
You know that one?
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I believe that if one person is a military, the minor's in the military, they are eligible to marry another minor who is an active military member, an emancipated minor, or someone who's 18 years of age or older. So they couldn't marry another civilian who was a minor.
Okay. So if you're if you're a minor, but one minor's in the military and one is not, you're still not. It's not an option. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's correct. They would have to seek emancipation. That would be their alternative to the 18-year age.
Okay. I guess I'm still have questions on active duty. I mean, as far as what's active duty, reserves, National Guard, so on. May I continue?
Yes, please.
I have one more question, yeah. And I don't want to, you know, belabor this too much. It talks about removing one man and one woman, replacing it with two natural persons. And I guess I was wondering if you could give me a definition of natural person.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, my understanding is that natural person is what has been replaced in this piece of, in this bill to make it in keeping with, to make it constitutional. To leave in one man and one woman means that it's unconstitutional. After that's the answer I got from the bill drafter.
I think there's a natural person's definition.
I'm not sure that's a question I don't know the answer to. I'm not sure there's a natural person's definition in Alaska statutes. I don't think that we're allowing people to engage in marrying something other than humans.
No, that's not what, may I?
Yeah, follow up.
It's not that I'm asking about that. My understanding is the definition of a natural person is how someone is born, which would mean that would take out any. I'm just asking if we're clear on what we're talking about here, if we're going to pass this into law.
Again, I don't have a, I'm not aware of a definition in Alaska statutes of what a natural person is.
All right, that's it. Thank you.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you went over this during the last committee meeting, but I don't see it in the bill. But you mentioned emancipation, which is a legal action, so an individual becomes emancipated from their parents. Was there a sort of parental permission clause, or is that what was removed from current law, where if someone gets the consent of their parents at 17, say they can get married?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, to become emancipated, you need parental consent unless parents are unreasonably withholding their consent or can't be reached. And you also need judicial approval. You need to go through a court hearing process.
Follow up.
So you need, so if a 17-year-old really wants to get married, the parents consent, they go to the court. Is that part of the emancipation process? Or the parents would have to consent to emancipation? Or if the parents didn't consent, they could also go through emancipation? Either way, the end product is emancipation, or is there a consent that's non-emancipation, if that makes any sense?
Through the chair, my understanding is that with this bill, the parents would give their consent in court to the emancipation, and the only reason they would not, their consent would not be needed is, again, if they were unreasonably withholding it, if they were found to be unreasonably withholding it.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
May I follow up with the emancipation? My understanding is you have to go to court to be emancipated. Isn't that correct? And if you're underage, you have to have an attorney, perhaps. I mean, it's not as easy as it seems. I know I wouldn't have been even pursued emancipation out of respect for my parents, because to me it's just something you just don't do. If I had told my parents I was wanted to become emancipated, it would be disrespectful, in my opinion, and to do that to get married, I think it's unfortunate we might have to consider that.
Noted. And Representative Johnson, I can't remember when the first hearing on HB 310 happened, or if you were or weren't here, but I'm thinking, in light of some of the questions you've asked, holding this until Thursday under bills previously heard, and we can take action then and also allow 2 days to just allow you to potentially dialogue with the sponsor's office or track down answers if that sounds amenable.
Thank you. And if I may, I wasn't my intent to come in and just, you know, go after your bill. I just wanted, I it wasn't here and these things came up and I thought I would, I just wanted to double check with these.
And you do have a perspective, at least I don't have, so yeah. Okay, well, I will hold HB 310, and then it's my intent to hear this again on Thursday and take action at that time, but just to have a little bit more time and not rush things. Thank you, Representative Klayman, for joining us all the way from next door. And that takes us to the third item on today's agenda, which is the first hearing, the main billing. Senator Costello, please join us for SCR 10, relating to last year of innovation, and staff Dakota. And please put yourself on the record and present the legislation.
Oops. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Mia Costello. I represent Senate District K, and I'm the sponsor of this resolution. And with me today is my aide, Dakota Orme, and she will be introducing the bill to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dakota Orme, staff to Senator Costello, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. Introduced by Robert Tucker last year at the Innovation Summit, Senate Concurrent Resolution 10 would proclaim 2019 as the Year of Innovation in Alaska. This designation spotlights a crucial need in our state and also highlights the work being done by the legislature and Alaskans statewide. Innovation can help address all challenges facing Alaska, whether that be harnessing technology or growing economic diversification. Alaskans are innovators by tradition and necessity. There is a pioneering spirit in our state that requires innovation and adaptation, reaching back not only to the founders that helped build our state, but also encompasses public policy and how we manage our resources. Declaring a year of innovation would not only spur conversations, but also allows organizations to take advantage of it in different ways. It also recognizes innovation that is already happening in our state from the university level to groups like Lego Robotics and Lemonade Day. Alaska constructs a culture where innovation, entrepreneurship, and out-of-the-box thinking is encouraged and accepted, and declaring a year of innovation will aid in the growth of this culture, as well as Alaska's overall economy. Mr. Chairman, I am available for any questions from the committee, and there are two people online available to answer questions as well.
Thank you, Ms. Orme. Any questions from the committee for the sponsor? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why 2019?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, we had said it was introduced last year originally as 2018, but as the session passed, we amended it to be 2019 so we can get an entire year and to really enjoy and prosper in innovation.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I know that we've been having these sexual assault awareness bills coming year after year after year. Is it your plan to have this go to 2020 for the next year, then 2021, or are we just looking at just 2019?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, as the sponsor and somebody who's made innovation and entrepreneurship sort of the hallmark of my legislative, you know, time here, I think that my intent was just to have 2019. I do believe that if we were to proclaim the year as the year of innovation, we would see a lot of positive results of such a designation in the form of actual startups and new jobs. And so it's my intent that this is the year. And if you want to come afterwards and name 2020, I welcome that.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And then a comment?
Yeah.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And I also want to thank the bill sponsor for including the university in this. You know, Alaska is, I think, we're either the 49th or 50th per patents per capita of any other nation. That may have changed, but one time we were, I can't remember if we were 49th or for dead last. The university, you know, I've always had a vision, much the same that Texas did in developing their petrochemical industry, is they did a lot of investment in their university towards research and development, and then they even had a materials development institute that they did, so that once the students learned the science and technologies, they come up with the machine tool technologies and the applications that they were able to entrepreneurially, you know, apply in their own state to be able to develop that petrochemical industry. Same thing that California did in developing their technology, Silicon Valley. is they really heavily invested in the university. And I think there's a lot of potential here in Alaska that's underutilized. The university plays a big role in that. You know, we look at the research dollars and everything else that we get, you know, we're able to leverage from the federal by having that investment. And I'm just looking at page 2, line 26, whereas university research contributes to the development of intellectual property, interdisciplinary, entrepreneurial programming and education, and effective technology transfer, and is a vital component of the effective innovation ecosystems. And then on to page 3, line 6, where 20% of innovations come from collaborations between multiple institutions, half of which are private-public partnerships between private companies and universities or government research labs. So I just want to thank the bill sponsor for including that in this innovation resolution.
Further questions from the committee for the sponsor? I would like to echo those comments, and I think as someone with a lot of friends in Alaska who are starting businesses and thinking about sort of the innovation ecosystem and creating value where there wasn't value before, this is really on point, and there are a lot of businesses that, be it Kelp Salsa or the Boardroom co-working space in Anchorage or some of these microgrid and energy startups, it's really exciting. And so this feels like it's consistent with those trends, which especially with our fiscal situation, we need more than ever. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Birch.
I was just going to say I fully support this resolution. I think as a mining engineer, I can tell you the Alaska started a long tradition of a creation of innovative products with the IntelliGiant. John Miskovich out of Fairbanks invented what we use today as a water cannon and for hydraulic purposes, and it's used around the world and is the standard for delivering water, and that was basically came out of Alaska, and it's just innovative solutions for everyday problems are kind of the watchword, and certainly something that we've got a good record on. I certainly embrace this. I think this is a great idea, you know, from the oil fields to the fish processors, and figuring out how we could just do a better job at what we're doing, and like to see this move on. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to add, the new UAF engineering building, I don't know if any of you have been to it yet, but there was a ribbon cutting there not too long ago, and a lot of people contributed to it, obviously the state of Alaska and some private industry, and they have a sort of lounge between the engineering school that's adjacent to the business school, so they want business students and engineering students to collaborate and have lunch and maybe come up with some entrepreneurial ideas, so I hopefully that will work, and I think a lot of people are thinking along these lines.
Thank you. At this time, we have public testimony notice today for SCR 10, and I'm going to open that now. There are two people online, both invited by the sponsor's office. Matt Morrison with the Pacific Northwest Economic Region. Mr. Morrison, if you can put yourself on the record and please present your testimony we've got time today, so 3 or less minutes. Please go ahead.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. This is Matt Morrison, Executive Director of the Pacific Northwest Economic Region, and I am happy to support SCR 10. I think that it's an opportunity to provide leadership not only in Alaska but the Pacific Northwest at enhancing ecosystems for innovation, which really require empowering the local public-private collaboration. I think that the idea of creating this next year can really spawn events around the state and encourage young people, not only young people, young and old people, to really enhance their creativity to solve real challenges within their own communities. Senator Costello actually has done a terrific job in leading the PennWER Innovation Work Group, and I'm sure this is an example that can impress and inform neighboring states and provinces of the potential role that states can play in promoting the shared leadership that innovation offers with local governments, communities, neighborhood schools, universities, and the private sector. So I really I think this is a great idea. I look forward to Alaska's leadership in the region, especially with the unique challenges that the environment in Alaska requires. And I think this is just a great opportunity to empower especially that collaboration between the public and private sector. And I fully support it and look forward to seeing what this really provides in terms of an enhancement of the ecosystem of innovation within Alaska. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Morrison, for your testimony. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, next online, Nolan Kluda from University of Alaska Center of Economic Development. Apologies if I mispronounced your last name, but please go ahead, put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 3 or less minutes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. For the record, I am Nolan Kluda, the Executive Director of the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development. I'm certainly in support of this resolution proclaiming 2019 the year of innovation. I think that the time is really right in Alaska to have more of a dialogue about innovation and entrepreneurship and future directions for our state to go. A lot of people don't know this, but some of our research has shown that Alaskans are more likely to start businesses than almost all other states. We tend to rank in the top 2 or 3 when it comes to individual starting a business. A lot of people don't always realize that, and startup companies in Alaska add about 4,000 to 6,000 jobs each year to the state economy, and that's even continued to be true as the state has entered a recession and as we've been losing jobs in the economy overall. New businesses are still being started, and those businesses are continuing to hire. It's a very remarkable thing. The state has a lot of the assets that are the kind of the fuel of innovation. In the university system, we have research specialties in energy and atmospheric science and Arctic technology in a number of other fields. Some of that research is moving into the commercialization phase. And there's a very active commercialization effort going on within the university. We also, as a state, have a very high concentration of engineers, of experts in technology that's related to a lot of our industries, our resource development industries, our transportation and aviation industries, and so there's a strong knowledge economy component to the industries that we have in state. We also have this entrepreneurship ecosystem forming right now that's maturing very rapidly. We have angel investor networks that specialize in investing in early stage startup companies. There's a formal angel network that exists now. There's a startup accelerator that exists to bring startup companies into a more mature phase. That Launch Alaska is the name of it. There's also a regular calendar of events like Startup Week, Startup Weekend, where folks can go through the process of creating a new business over a 54-hour period on a weekend, and there will be one of those in Juneau, actually, and later this month. Within our center, we try to do applied research on the economy, and we also try to apply that into activities that might foster more entrepreneurship. So we have a sprint process right now where we take interdisciplinary teams, folks that are from a business background, an engineering background, and many others, and we get them to focus on creating a new product following the Google sprint process. So that's, we have an effort called Volt 49 now that's underway to do just that. So to wrap up my time with you, I certainly appreciate the leadership of Senator Costello and of this committee for hearing this this resolution, and I love to add my voice to its support of it. So thank you very much for the time today.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, I'm going to, we have one other person who's just joined us from Fairbanks, Juliet Shepherd from Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation. Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 3 or less minutes.
Thank you. This is Juliet Shepherd. I'm the technology-led development project manager here at Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation. And I would like to commend Senator Costello again for bringing this bill forward and all of the contributing entities FEDC included, for helping to craft an inclusive and meaningful resolution for the purposes of aligning infrastructure in a state in which innovation can be developed and startups can flourish into full-stage Alaska businesses with the support of the legislature, the state, university, economic development entities, and the community through public-private partnerships. As one of the founders of the Year of Innovation Pipeline, which has been piloted over the past 2 years, has resulted in 3 startup businesses, specifically from the cycle of the integrative cycle moving through a process in a cyclical manner, incorporating available infrastructure. We know it works, and this is an opportunity to be able to highlight the pipelines, the respective pipelines that are emerging, that collectively make up a channel in which not only private individuals and communities can enter into the startup process, but also have the opportunity to work closely with the university, and in importantly diversifying the perspectives that are included into creating products that are useful to the public, both in and well beyond Alaska, incorporating intellectual property through research through the university. So we very much appreciate the opportunity to have this highlighted in this manner and for the legislative support for this, and thank you again.
Thank you very much, Ms. Shepherd, for your testimony. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, is there anyone in the room to testify on SCR 10? Seeing no one coming forward, I'm going to close public testimony. That takes the bill back before the committee, and this piece of legislation is noticed for Thursday. I'm going to set an amendment deadline for 10 a.m. that morning, so 10 a.m. this Thursday, for any amendments on SCR 10, and it's my intention for the committee to take action on the legislation at that time. Thank you very much, Senator Costello, for joining us. And that takes us to the last piece of legislation on today's agenda, HB 360, State Internet Procurement, from Representative Kawasaki, who I believe is on the fifth floor wading through amendments right now in House Finance. This is the first hearing of this piece of legislation. Mr. Garish, being representative of the office, would you come forward, put yourself on the record, and introduce the bill, which I imagine is probably a pretty brief endeavor.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Chair Christ-Tompkins and the committee. My name is Jacob Garish, staff to Representative Scott Kawasaki. As you said, Representative Kawasaki is unavailable as he is up in House Finance currently. House Bill 360 is an act relating to state procurement regulations. HB 360 would require contracted internet service providers, ISPs, to practice net neutrality while doing business with the state of Alaska. It would add to the state procurement code a prohibition from contracting with ISPs that do not treat all websites equally or that engage in paid prioritization. HB 360 would harness the state's market power to incentivize ISPs to keep their word and follow net neutrality in practice. The governors of Montana, New York, New Jersey, and Vermont have all signed executive orders implementing procurement restrictions like those in HB 360, and the Oregon State Legislature just passed a law similar to HB 360. This bill would ensure that the agencies of the state of Alaska have access to a free and open internet, and it would put ISPs to ensure the public has access to the same. Thank you, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Birch.
As we discussed in another committee through the chair, I don't see the need for this. I think we have a competitive market out there for these services, and I guess the question similar to what I asked before, have we seen any demonstration of any of our state service providers, throttling back on their service or trying to otherwise compromise the quality of service that they're offering to us as a client? Through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Birch, I'm not aware of any cases of that, but there are cases where companies have throttled and blocked in other states, usually with other companies like Netflix or sharing services.
Yeah. Follow up.
You
know, the Netflix is kind of a red herring that keeps popping up. You know, it's an incident, as I understand it, happened some time ago. This appears to me to be a, you know, a very, unfortunately, a very, you know, largely partisan effort to try to make a statement against a problem that doesn't exist. And I guess I won't be supporting it, but I don't see why we should be mucking around with the state procurement guidelines. It seems to me if you've got a service provider, whether it's somebody that's doing tire work or anything else, if they're not providing the service you want, find somebody else. But this to me seems unnecessary and burdensome at a time when we've got a whole lot of other things on our plate. But thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm going to join Representative Birch in saying I'm not really seeing the need for this. And, you know, we have another net neutrality bill out there. If it passes, this wouldn't be needed. But more importantly, even if it didn't pass, and these companies chose to, so we have three, we'll say we have three primary ISPs in the state, and they have promised not to exploit the markets. But if they were to back away from that promise and decided to charge different rates, slow down services for higher paying customers, it kind of puts the states in a tough spot. If all of our ISPs chose to adopt that practice and we need their service, and now we're prohibited from utilizing that service, we're not their only customer. So I think that we're careful what you ask for in this particular case. So I think it's just another avenue in the net neutrality thing, and I don't think I'm going to support in this bill, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions for the sponsor staff? Representative Tuck.
Not a question, but just a comment. You know, we look at major pieces of infrastructure. We want to make sure it's for the public good. And there used to be a time in America's history where corporations were chartered. And part of them being able to get a chartered corporation was to make sure that it was for the good of the people. Not just for profit and everything else, but for actually offering a benefit. And you know, we've deregulated the telecommunications industry, allowing for the competition, which is good. There are concerns with that, though, because then it's all about profit more than it is about delivering necessary infrastructure for the exchange of goods and services and making sure our economy thrives. And so we had a net neutrality provisions and regulations that prevented from communications company from choking down, from doing some of the practices that, of course, gives them advantage over other companies, as well as making people pay for more and more and more services. And you know, when we look at being in a capitalistic world, how you spend your money really determines what happens and what doesn't happen. I mean, idealistically, in capitalism. And what I like about this procurement policy here is that we're setting up a policy that we want to see net neutrality. We want to see goods and services be fair for everyone, and we will spend our money towards those companies that maintain that and keep that going. That's capitalism. That's, you know, people spend their money on products because, and not only is it the product that I'm buying, but it might be the service that this provides for others as well. And, you know, we have 8A status for Native corporations. Why do we do that? Because we know that Native corporations are bringing it back home to their communities. They're building septic systems and water systems and everything else they're trying to promote. And so we have procurement policies in that way to promote the will of the legislature or the will of the state. And I got to tell you, I am just amazed how many people under age of 30 that know about net neutrality. I didn't know anything about it until younger generations have informed me about it. And, you know, they may not be able to tell us about oil taxes. They may not be able to tell us about, you know, other pieces of legislation. But, boy, when it comes to net neutrality, I just have never seen so many people concerned. And I haven't heard anyone say, oh, man, we need to get rid of net neutrality. I've only heard of big corporations say that. And even some big corporations are concerned about net neutrality because it affects their deliverable, their ability to deliver goods and services as well. But it's just this small group of those that have a niche in the market right now, and they have an upper hand, that are the ones that are asking to get rid of net neutrality. So I think this is something that the state can put their money where their mouth is on trying to spend their money towards a procurement policy, or have a procurement policy so we can spend our money towards the things that is good for people.
Well, just a quick comment before going to you, Representative Johnson. It looks like we've got lots of thoughts here, and we'll definitely, this is only going to be the first hearing, and we'll see where this goes from here, but good thoughts from all sides. Representative Johnson, please go ahead.
So, obviously, net neutrality sounds good. And my first blush was I thought, okay, this is great, right? But then after thinking about it a bit, I'm wondering, so there's no blocking of anything? I mean, may not block any legal? I mean, may not treat all Internet websites equally regardless of content, source, business relationship, and so on?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, yes.
I mean, I'm thinking there's probably times you want to have some things blocked.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, if there's illegal content or illegal things going on the internet, a court can order for a site to be shut down. This isn't related to that, if that's what you're getting at.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I guess I'm thinking of spam. Not necessarily illegal, terribly annoying. Might want to be some kind of, I mean, I'm just thinking, would, or maybe that's not a paid, it's not paid prioritization, but is item one, if it doesn't treat it equally. I'm just looking at item number one, C1.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Johnson.
Just explain that to me.
So for a company that might have a small company, like let's take for example a local bed and breakfast, they might have a website, and a large cruise ship company might also have a website. The internet company wouldn't be allowed to block the small website and let the larger website have access. I think that's what we're intending. You'd still be able to have spam filters and things like that if you wanted to block spam.
And just at risk of us getting down a rabbit hole, my suggestion is maybe set this bill aside for now, but we can pick up this line of questioning in the future if and when it comes back before us, unless Representative Johnson, we really want to go.
Well, I just thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence. I guess I just feel like I do have some concerns with regulating. I just want to make sure that when we start to regulate things or under-regulate things or whatever we're doing, even when we think we're not regulating, sometimes we're regulating things. So I want to make sure there's just no unintended consequences. And then I know that there's some questions on the FCC and their ruling or their change that they made, and I thought maybe you might want to explain that. But I don't want to get into long details down the rabbit hole, so I will leave that to the discretion of the chair, as however far he wants to go with
or
that.
Other members of the committee, as it might be. Representative Ledoux.
So how does this work? Like, sometimes you might get one internet provider who can provide things faster than another internet provider, and I'm, you know, I'm technologically challenged. But would that change that sort of thing?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, you would still be able to buy access to higher speed internet services. It's just that the ISP wouldn't be able to speed up or slow down those websites, the websites that you access. So you could buy a 1 gig plan, and all of the websites that you would access through that 1 gig plan would come in at the same speed, if that answers your question.
So follow up. So, okay, so this net neutrality rule was rescinded recently. And so here in Alaska, do any of our providers not engage in net neutrality?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, all the ISPs, in-state ISPs that I'm aware of, have actually pledged to support net neutrality. So the bill in front of you wouldn't affect any of the current contracts that we have, if that's what you're wondering.
And Mr. Gish, maybe just to make sure that we're all tracking, could you spell out initialisms like ISPs, Internet Service Providers?
Yes.
Just to make sure that we're all tracking. Thank you. Follow up?
I guess I'm just sort of wondering, so if everybody's pledged not to do this and we're not having any problems right now, why are we talking about this?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, on April 23rd, if a internet company wanted to, they could begin blocking content online. They could begin packaging content online and charging extra for that. So I think that HB 360 would harness the state's market power and then incentivize ISPs to keep their word that you notice that they've made and continue following net neutrality in practice.
Just follow up. So why wouldn't we wait to see whether they actually, you know, whether there's a problem?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I think that it's the intention to prevent that from occurring at all.
Thank you.
Representative Knott.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So let me ask you this question. Hypothetically, so you take a mega giant with unlimited resources, we use AT&T, and then you take a small independent ISP service provider like, we'll say, GCI, who does not have the same resources. So they get in a bidding war with, we'll say, Netflix to provide streaming services, where AT&T would have multiple bandwidths and GCI would be limited. So could you not hypothetically put GCI at a disadvantage? Say they're in a bidding war. Netflix is bargaining with both, and GCI is offering them a faster speed than AT&T will for less money or a better value. So are we not now putting a small ISP provider at a disadvantage in competition? I mean, it could be a hypothetical, but it could be a real issue if you prohibited. Are we giving unfair competition to a larger ISP provider by enacting something like this?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, I don't believe so, and it depends on how the ISP connects to the broader internet. So there's something called peer-to-peer agreements. So that's how GCI would connect to the internet in the lower 48, and they have fiber optic cables going underneath the ocean connecting to Seattle and Portland and other places. I know that you mentioned GCI. They were just bought up by Liberty, which is a company in Colorado. So that might have expanded their peer-to-peer network. That might have made it easier for them to access more bandwidth. I don't know. It depends on each company. Smaller companies might not even connect out of state. They might connect to the internet through in-state ISPs as well. I don't think I can speak to that. Yeah.
So I guess the point being, I don't care if it's ACS, GCI, as you're right, they did merge or was purchased. But the point is, if you have two companies with a disparity in resources, does it not put a smaller company who's trying to compete to provide a service at a disadvantage if you limit their ability to do so? And you don't need to answer that, but I think it's food for thought if this was to pass. It could have, I'll call it, unanticipated consequences in that regime there. So thank you.
And through the chair, Representative Knopp, this bill wouldn't require any companies to practice net neutrality. It would just require that the state only procure internet from those that do.
But it would prohibit them companies from now doing business with the state. So,
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess my other question is, how do you envision this being enforced? And who would be responsible for that enforcement?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the commissioner of administration can adopt procurement regulations through, I guess it's AS 3630040. So this would require that the commissioner of administration include net neutrality when they're adopting those procurement regulations. And I think of it sort of similar to like an in-state hire requirement, that like if we give money to a contractor, we throw in a 10%, 20% in-state hire. It's sort of along the same vein.
Follow-up?
Well, as one of the earliest users of the internet, back before it was the internet, I'm all for the free and open use of the net, and for having equal access to things. I just want to make sure that we're dusting off all the things that might happen, and if we are trying to solve a problem that really doesn't exist, identify whether that's necessary or not. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. On that note, got a sense of the will of the committee. Thank you all for your comments and questions. Hold this bill, and want to give a heads up on Thursday, second hearing of SCR 10 from Senator Costello, and as mentioned earlier, 10 a.m. amendment deadline that morning, and intention to move that bill if that's the will of the committee. Also, HB 71, which is the governor's bill in committee substitute form relating to allowing him to donate his salary without tax penalties, and working with the Department of Administration for potential additional content on that piece of legislation, and we'll share that with the committee when we have it.
Could you repeat that? What now? The governor wants to give up his salary but doesn't want tax consequences?
Yeah, brief it is. Except I thought it was actually put on the record last Thursday when I was gone. It hasn't. So HB 71, and we're waiting on the legislation. There's going to be a committee substitute, and the committee substitute for HB 71 is going to relate to allowing the governor to donate a salary, which, as you might recall, he did this last year, and avoid there's some tax penalties, or it's very difficult for him to donate a salary if he wants to.
You can write a check.
I'm sure the Department of Administration will be able to speak to it, and you can have at them, Representative Birch. So just wanted to give a heads up that will be coming forward to be greeted with skepticism, it sure seems. HB 400, this is the second hearing. This is the committee bill coming out of the Finance Subcommittee process. That will be coming back before us. The indirect expenditure hearing will be postponed until further notice.
What was 400?
That's the fees for fire prevention services. That was the bill that was put on last Thursday when I was gone. And then HJR 38, the Alaska Railroad resolution, will be coming back before the committee as well. And yes, and Kathy reminds me that there are amendment deadlines for HB 400 and HJR 38. And because both those bills will be heard at 3:15 on Thursday, we'll set the deadline at 10 a.m. that same morning. And if that is an imposition, if any of you intend to offer amendments, please let me know. But all equal, let's plan on that. With no further business before the committee, at 4:16 p.m., we are adjourned.